This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. It's May 1st, so if you're still hanging around playing hockey in May, you know you're having a pretty good season. You got a couple of games tonight, but two games to go over last night. And the Blue Jackets now two steps away from a conference final appearance as they beat the Bruins 2-1. Another classic. This one didn't go to overtime. It looked like it was going to as the Bruins were buzzing late. There's a lot of storylines in this one. These two teams are not liking each other very much, and there is somebody that has to be looked upon as the villain right now, and that, of course, is Brad Marchand. Not only did he have the high stick on Boone Jenner that led to the insurance goal for Columbus, but also hitting Harrington in the back of the head and then darting away from the play might lead to him getting a suspension. Now, I realize he didn't hit him hard in the head, but it's still a gutless move, and it's a selfish move, too. And I understand the value of Brad Marchand because certainly he's the pest that Claude Lemieux was with those Devils teams of the mid-90s, Esatikin and with the Rangers in 94, and, of course, all those years with the Edmonton Oilers. Sean Avery made a living at it with the Rangers as well. But you've got to be able to dance on that line. And the good ones can dance on that line and not get their team in trouble, either with penalties or suspensions. Marchand is living in a completely different time. If he was living 20 years ago in this league, he probably would get away with a lot more. But he's leading to possibly in one of the biggest games of the Boston Bruins season, in Columbus trying to avoid going down 3-1, he might find himself getting suspended. We'll see what the league decides to do. You know, checking out Twitter, a lot of people whose opinions I value tremendously believe that it should at least get a game because he has a history, because it was completely unnecessary. It's tough enough for the Boston Bruins right now. Bobrovsky's playing out of his mind. That building was crazy last night. Brandon Dubinsky said after game two that it was going to be much louder than Boston. He might have been right. A monster has been created with his team, and now one of the most valuable players on the team might end up getting himself a suspension for game four. We'll see how it goes as of this recording. Haven't heard anything yet. But even if he gets away with it, what about the high stick on Boone Jenner that led to the game-winning goal? So there's a lot of things in play here. I understand he's valuable. I understand that he's a pest. But he has to control himself a little bit better. Jenner had a tremendous game last night. Bobrovsky makes 36 saves. Right now, you got to feel really good if you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan that this might be your year to go to the conference final. You know, Jenner gets the goal. Duchesne gets the huge goal on the power play, his persistence around the net. The Columbus Blue Jackets survive the late second period goal by DeBrusk. The league got that right. It's a continuous play. And for people who don't know what a continuous play is, the whistle blew, and it might have blown before the puck crossed the line. But the reason it's moot at this particular point is because there was the continuation play, which means the puck was already struck. The puck is heading towards the net. So even if the whistle had blown, the puck continuing towards the net and crossing the line would have allowed the goal to stand. Now, if that goal had been, that puck had been helped along after the whistle had blown, then it would have been dead. But the continuous play allowed that to stand, and that could have been a heartbreaker for the Blue Jackets. Having a 2-0 lead, giving up a goal in the last 30 seconds of a period, the Bruins could have came in like a house on fire in that third period, and it did not happen. So that was a huge, huge momentum created by the Boston Bruins. They could not take advantage of it. Bobrovsky has been tremendous. He's completely shaken the reputation of not being a big-time playoff goaltender. And now the Blue Jackets take the 2-1 series lead. Sharks with a 4-2 win over the Avalanche. Give San Jose credit because that building was up for grabs at the Pepsi Center, and it didn't seem to bother the Sharks at all. They get the two first-period goals. Logan Couture's first of what would be a hat trick, his seventh of the postseason. Timo Meier with a great goal late in the first period, but then a shorthanded goal as the penalty was about to expire by Nathan MacKinnon. His fifth makes it 2-1. You go to the third period, Nieto, the former Shark, beats his old team again. His fourth of the playoffs, that comes midway through the third period, and you're thinking we're going to overtime, but no. Logan Couture with a great individual effort, just a minute and 5 seconds later, gives the Sharks the lead back. Couture completes the hat trick with the empty netter with 30 seconds to play. He leads all goal scorers in the postseason now with 9. Could be the front runner for the Conn Smythe if this continues for San Jose. And again, the play of Martin Jones has been absolutely spectacular. 27 shots that he faced, 25 saves, but some of them were big. Both teams hit posts in this one, so there was a lot. It could have gone either way, and that's the way this series is going to go. I told you, it's very similar to Columbus, Boston, very similar to Dallas and St. Louis. These games are contested very close. Nobody's blowing anybody out. It was a two-goal win for San Jose, but it took the empty netter to do that. So we've got ourselves a great series going on. Sharks up 2-1. Jones playing well. Couture playing out of his mind. Sharks, of course, overcoming the injuries, but the Avalanche stick it around as well. I don't think that series is nowhere near complete. So credit the buildings for being electric in both Columbus and Colorado, and give the Sharks and the Blue Jackets credit for taking the 2-1 series leads. Now, we got 2 games tonight after a couple of days off. Islanders hoping that a change of scenery will get them back in the series. They go to Carolina to take on the Hurricanes, down 2-0. Clutterbuck is going to be a game-time decision for the Islanders as he's banged up. The Hurricanes have tons of injuries as well. McElhaney is going to start for the Canes. The Islanders just have to get some breaks, first of all, and they've got to try to finish when they get those breaks. I think they're a better team than they've showed in the first 2 games of this series. You can talk about the change in venue from Long Island to Brooklyn. You could talk about them not getting the breaks. You could talk about some of the calls in this. But the fact is they had a 2-1 lead going into the third period. They blew that. Now they go to another building that's going to be up for grabs tonight in Carolina. Those Hurricane fans can smell it. But McElhaney is a guy. They've created a monster with him. He was the second oldest player ever to come in relief to get a win in the playoffs. He'll become the second oldest player ever to make his first ever start in the NHL playoffs tonight, as he's a couple of days away from age 35. But he's still a goaltender that's been waived by multiple teams in this league. Islanders got to get to them. They got to score the first goal, build on that, get the win, and then I can believe. They're not coming back from 3-0 down. History will tell you that. So the Islanders got to get the win tonight in Carolina. That'll be the 7 o'clock start. At 9:30, the Blues and the Stars from Dallas, as that series right now belongs to St. Louis, 2-1. Every game has been close. I have a feeling we're going to get overtime tonight. I'm doing the pre and post for Westwood One. Coverage will begin at 9:15. Check your local listings for that. Should be a good one. These two teams are identical to each other, and every game has gone down to the wire. I expect not only this game to be the same as the previous three, but I also expect the series to go deep and be up for grabs. I wouldn't be surprised if we're playing deep into a game 7 to decide that series. And looking at all these teams that have played in the second round, and obviously the Islanders have not won a game yet, but both games that they lost by just a goal. All of the teams that are in, I think, have the ability to win a Stanley Cup. And that's why it's going to be so important to get by this series, because literally, I believe, you're missing the opportunity at Macy making a championship run. I think that's how close all these teams are, and that's how fun I think these playoffs are really going to be. All right, let's hear from you at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. David Hines says, you mentioned yesterday the Pepsi Center was going to be popping with the Avs and Nuggets games this week. The closest I've been to it was driving outside past it. Looking like a nice arena and nice to get a great environment on TV. Have you gotten to call a game there? I've called a couple of games there at the Pepsi Center, and both have completely different vibes. I called a game on New Year's Eve there a couple of years ago. I think it was 16-17. Rangers beat the Avalanche, and it was just a very nondescript game. That's when the Avalanche were one of the worst teams in the league. And then the following year, the Avalanche beat the Rangers in a game that was much more competitive. I think it was not this past season, but the year before. So I've been there a couple of times. The one had no feel because the team was awful. I was there when the team was good, and it was definitely up for grabs. And in case you missed it in the podcast yesterday, it's the first time ever that the Nuggets and the Avalanche have both made it to the second round of the playoffs. And we're in the midst of 4 consecutive days where there'll be a playoff game at the Pepsi Center. It started with the Nuggets win over the Trailblazers. Last night was the Avalanche loss to the Sharks. Tonight, back to the Portland Trailblazers and the Nuggets. And the next night will be the game 4 between the Avalanche and the Sharks. So it should be fun. Johnny Mack says, I believe based on the fact he's had history of questionable actions and in game 1 stepping, stomping, and breaking Cam Atkinson sick, how could you not suspend a minimum 1 game? Eventually actions add up and can be tolerated to a certain point. I'm with you, and you're talking about obviously Brad Marchand. We opened the podcast with it. I don't think there's any question that discipline is in order. We'll see what the NHL tries to do. But you're right, he dances on the line. And the true great ones know not to cross it. But Marchand has had a history of crossing that line, and I think he certainly crossed the line last night. Philip says, if Adam Fox didn't so clearly just want to sign with the Rangers, what would it cost to trade for him? This trade was a steal for the Rangers, right? It does look that way. Obviously, Fox wanted to sign with the Rangers, in case you missed it. The Rangers traded a couple of picks, a second-round pick and a conditional third-round pick to the Hurricanes for Fox. He's 21 years old. He's a kid from Jericho, Long Island, so I'm sure he grew up a Ranger fan, and he is a tremendous player, a candidate for the Hobey Baker Award, the best college player in the sport. So Fox will be, I think, an addition to the Rangers, and if he plays 30 or more games this season for the Rangers, that third-round pick becomes a second-round pick, but you cannot put a price on a young defenseman, so I think the Rangers did the right thing there. And Mark says, Don, Rangers' recent Adam Fox signing and giving him only one of four Hobey Baker winners have gone on to become bona fide NHLers, roughly 10 out of 40. Do you think the award is realistically gauged to assess a college prospect, NHL's potential? Thanks for answering. Well, it's like the Heisman Trophy in the NFL, right? Although I think there's a higher percentage of Heisman Trophy winners to go on to have success in the National Football League, but it's telling you that you're the best college player. Does not necessarily mean you can make that leap. And there have been plenty. I remember Gilroy played for the Rangers, and he had an okay career, nothing great. And there are some that turn out to be really good. But I do agree with you, because you are a Hobey Baker winner, does not near classify you as a guarantee to become a stud in the National Hockey League. But just looking at his statistics and looking at how he's being treated, it looks to me like I think he's got a real shot. Right-handed defenseman fits in right there with the Rangers. Sean says, is there a scenario where New Jersey would swap with the Rangers one for two? How do Hughes and Kako compare? Would it be worth it? I'll put down my phone, wait 12 hours, and listen. There doesn't seem to be any appetite. First of all, Rangers and Devils hardly ever make a deal. They certainly made a deal a couple of years ago when Michael Grabner was traded by the Rangers to the New Jersey Devils, but it never happens. You're not going to do this. Now, there's a lot of Ranger fans that are content with Kako, and they should be because he's a pure goal scorer, but knowing that he is the second-best prospect in this draft. Hughes is number one. So the Rangers would have to give up something other than the second overall pick, something significant, because it seems to me that Hughes is the slam dunk number one. And if you've been looking at the Devils' social media lately, they keep tweeting all the things he's been doing with the under-18 tournament, so I think Hughes is going to go, and I don't think anything is going to change there. Matt says, Columbus is rocking. I went last year versus the Hawks, and it's a nice stadium. They are rocking and so loud in this playoff game versus the Bruins, at least via watching television. Good to see them behind their team expanding hockey in Ohio. No question with Columbus. I've said it before, and I've said it again, and EJ and I have talked about it quite a bit too. When you look at that arena, if you've ever been there, it's great. Now listen, it's Ohio State Buckeye territory, I get it. But the building is gorgeous, they've really built a lot of restaurants and things around that area. It's a very nice area, it's right down the street from the convention center, it's very close to the airport. I've done a ton of games there, the atmosphere is tremendous. And I remember talking with people and I said, boy, if this team ever made a run and the rest of the league was exposed to this building and this atmosphere, this could really put the Blue Jackets on the map. And unfortunately, they never made it out of the first round. But now they're out of the first round. They've got a lead in the second round. If they end up going to the Stanley Cup Final or winning a cup, I think the Columbus, that would become one of the destinations possibly for free agents. And I think it could become a very, very fun place for people to go and check out a game. So I think they just needed that kind of exposure. And now they're getting it. And the fans are passionate. The fans are loyal. And it just takes a run. I saw it with Carolina back in 2002. We saw it with Nashville back in 2016. Certainly we saw it with the Dallas Stars when they moved from Minnesota to Dallas and won their cup in 99, went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2000. That's where you build a fan base. And that's where it can really grow. So very, very big. The Columbus is making this run. Sal says, hey, Don, huge fan of the podcast. With regards to you and EJ discussing the Marchand stick-breaking incident, think it has to be a penalty if deemed intentional and not a warning, reason being what prevents a player from doing that at a key moment. And, of course, and I agree, I think I don't know what you would call it, a delay game penalty or something, but I'm with you. I do think that should have been a penalty. Let's see here. Let's go There's a popular or a fan of ours that did not put his game misconduct spelled correctly, so I don't have it on my list here, and I want to be able to find it because he actually had a pretty cool tweet. I wanted to make sure I read it correctly, if I can now find it. It's NYR Fanatic, who says, Brandon Dubinsky was right. It would be Columbus that was clearly louder than Boston in Game 3 of this series. Doc Emmerich makes watching a game so fun, and last night's game makes it incredibly hard to root against the Blue Jackets. And that is so true. And if you're a Ranger fan, you obviously have the connection with John Tortorella. You've got the connection with Brandon Dubinsky. You've got the connection, obviously, with John Davidson, who's the president of the organization. So there's a few ex-Rangers on the team, and I think it's a great story. Listen, they share the same division as the Rangers, Devils, Islanders, Penguins, Flyers, you know, all that. So I understand that it's hard to root for a division rival, but considering the Blue Jackets have not really been in the same division as those teams really that long, and I think it's a tremendous story. Heck, what's happening in Carolina is a tremendous story, but at least they've won a cup over the last 13 years. This is the first time those fans are feeling it. And I've always had a warm spot in my heart for John Tortorella. I know he's sometimes a very difficult guy to get along with, but I always did. So I'm kind of rooting for them as well. I don't have a dog in the fight, but you do have, obviously, some emotional attachment to teams. And I would definitely love to see Columbus make a run. Boston's been there before, winning a cup in 2011, going to a Stanley Cup final in 2013, a perennial winner. I got a soft spot for them too, because I really would love to see McAvoy, who I've gotten to know in recent years, get a cup. But he's young, and I think Boston will have other opportunities, but it's hard not to gravitate to the story of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And as far as your opinion on Doc, you couldn't be more spot on. I think he's the best in not only the sport, but all of sports. He makes every game seem big. It's genuine. I've gotten to know him. He's a phenomenal guy, and I hope he does it forever because he's that kind of an individual. So I would love the opportunity for him to continue calling hockey forever because he is just so good at what he does. All right, we got a couple of games tonight to go over tomorrow. You can get in touch with me at Don LaGreca, hashtag game misconduct. Looking forward to talking to you tomorrow. Get closer and closer to the conference final. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.